Welcome to the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast here on the Backbreaker Media Network. And now, your host, Big Bad Boris.
It is a special edition of the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast. My name is Big Bad Boris, and this week it is Ask Boris. And I was going to do this by myself, but I thought, no, nobody wants to sit and listen to me talk to myself for an hour. So I enlisted the help of a good man, a comrade, a colleague, if you will, Mr. Mike the Ref, Melancholy in the Infinite Sadness. What is it again?
It's Maloney. You got it. You know, everybody wants to screw it up just for the hell of it. But you missed a little part in that statement there. You asked somebody, a great guy and whatnot, but then he couldn't show up, so he called me.
Oh, right? Come on now. That's crazy talk.
Anyway.
Thank you for being here and doing this. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and I thought you would be the perfect man to answer the questions. And you're the one who kind of gave me this platform. You offered me this podcast slot, so I'd like to publicly thank you for doing that. I'm having a lot of fun with this.
Well, I am over the moon excited about the fact that you fit the mantra perfectly of what Backbreaker Media is all about. We're about Western Canadian wrestling from the people that make it special, and you're definitely one of those people that make it special. And hell, I enjoy asking you questions.
And I do all my own editing.
Well, that too.
All right. There was something I was going to ask you, and I had it in my head like 3 seconds ago, and then I forgot it.
It'll come by about in another half hour here or so we're talking. So
I basically stole this idea. Dirty Duke Durango on the Duke You Suck podcast did Ask Duke, and I was like, that's kind of a cool, fun idea. So I'll be the first to admit that I lifted this from Duke, but Duke is a great guy, and I actually asked him. I said, hey, sorry I nicked your idea, and he said it was all good, as I figured that he would. So we're going to go through. Thank you, everybody who submitted questions. A lot of friends and colleagues submitted questions, and I will do my best to answer them with some sort of intelligence. My opinion is just that. It's just my opinion. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one. This is episode 10, by the way. So I want to thank everybody who's taken the time to listen, and some of my very good friends who've taken the time to appear on the podcast. And there's more to come. I will announce next week's guest at the end of this broadcast.
Ooh,
I know.
That's good. That's going to be interesting here.
Pins and the fact and needles.
That you've lasted 10 podcasts, that's longer than 80% of the podcasts out there. So.
Well, I get a chance to talk about two of my favorite things and chat with friends. And I mean, what's not to like, right?
Absolutely.
By the way, we are officially not sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon. Not sponsored by a delicious, tasty beer called Pabst Blue Ribbon.
We need to be.
I heard a rumor you mentioned to me, and I don't know if I should mention this or not, but you mentioned that there may or may not be Punk and Pile Driver merchandise coming. Is this a thing? Or can we not talk about this?
We could absolutely talk about it. If you want to take a look right now, there is a link in the description to the podcast for the merchandise store, my personal merchandise store on my Twitch stream, which I've basically converted into the Backbreaker Media merchandise store. Currently, there's Clandestine Society merch available on there.
Excellent.
Wouldn't you love to get your old Clandestine fanny pack?
I mean, I don't know why I'm not wearing one right now.
And how about a clandestine pillow?
And the t-shirts are awesome.
I just picked up some for all the guys for all their hard work during Clandestine, and they are absolutely amazing. The comfort, the style, and I've made them dirt cheap, guys.
And I would actually, on a side note, like to single you out and thank you for all of your hard work on Clandestine. Not only do you do a stellar job of calling the shows with me, but you do a lot of all of the editing and putting the shows together and stuff. And I'm not sure if everybody knows that. So definitely big kudos to you to helping make this product the success that it is.
Well, thank you, kind sir. It is actually a big team effort. There's a lot of people that put effort into this. A lot of them don't want to be named. You should be named, Boris. You need to be. Michael Richard Blaze is a hell of a editor himself, and absolutely, he helps out with a lot of the highlight packages and whatnot. Yeah. And you're going to see a lot more coming out of the Clandestine Society soon. Now with the introduction of YouTube Shorts, if you guys haven't heard about those, they're quick form videos I'm going to try and get those started set up for a little bit more connectivity with our fans, because that's what's most important.
And Twitter's got a new thing too, I saw. I think it's called Fleets or something, where you can kind of do like a live chat through Twitter. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I want to kind of mess around with that a little bit.
It works so well, they're canceling it on Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Twitter put out a tweet a couple of weeks ago saying, it's been great, but we're canceling this as of the 3rd.
Oh, I thought it would be in like a neat way to do like a mini live podcast, but you know what?
Well,
forget it.
Well, I know we want to get on these questions, but I'll just mention it's a lot like what the Instagram Live was.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much the same thing. So, which is pretty much the same thing as TikTok is doing now. So, and what YouTube Shorts is becoming. So
keep track of all this shit.
Exactly. It's nuts. We have a hard enough time trying to keep track of a million moves in a match, right?
Yeah. I can't remember all the names of all the shit now, and then everybody gets mad at me. Oh, well.
What are you talking about? I'm the one that has that problem.
All right. Let's, combined all the questions into a couple of emails, and I fired them off to you this afternoon. So let us begin.
Well, the biggest talk of the week has been about the Matt Cardona and him winning the GCW heavyweight title. The first question I'm going to throw at you here, my question on your episode is, what do you think of Matt Cardona being the new GCW champion?
Now, I haven't seen the show and the match yet because I watch all the GCW stuff in order and I'm behind. I'm still working through the Texas shows. I just finished the first, the Fight Club Houston show, and it was fantastic. I'm all for it. I think it's super, super cool what they're doing right now. I had talked a long time ago about how I was excited to see GCW go from just putting on stellar matches to starting to do a little bit with stories, like we saw it with Jimmy Lloyd and G Raver, and we're seeing it with Dean Ambrose, or not Dean Ambrose, fuck, John Moxley and Nick Gage. And now we're seeing it with the Matt Cardona thing. Again, I haven't seen the match. I heard it was quite good. I'm all for it. I think Matt Cardona is doing a great job of riling up the fans with the social media. I want to talk a little bit about the throwing of debris at the end of the show. Now, you were saying that apparently some of it was plants, or is that's the scuttlebutt? I haven't heard that myself.
Well, it's the internet, it's Twitter, so take it for what it's worth. But there have been reports that the promoter paid a few people to throw said beer bottles in the ring, which I get what kind of heat you're going to get off that. And the reaction has been absolutely spectacular. But what do you think? Let's take that out of that. If it's just purely fans throwing beer bottles, cans, all that stuff into the ring.
Okay.
Do you consider that the nuclear heat?
Sorry. As with anything, like there's people that love it. There's people that like, and people like Dave Meltzer that hate it. But I think the truth lies along, as it does on a lot of things, kind of in the middle gray area. Because we saw it with the NWO early on, every NWO beatdown promo, there would be lots of stuff getting thrown in. And it is definitely like that was a lot of heat. And, you know, the old school guys always used to talk about getting batteries and stuff thrown at them. And like, you know, if they're not trying to kill you, you're not doing your job and all that kind of stuff. I don't necessarily have a big problem with it, except for if you're one of those assholes who's throwing glass bottles, or you're one of those assholes who's throwing full cans. I heard a rumor, or I read a rumor, that somebody threw a pizza cutter. Those guys are assholes.
And I think most of the bottles that got into the rig were actually glass ones.
Yeah, it shouldn't happen all the time. I mean, this was a not a special case, but, you know, a unique case. I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but if you throw like full cans, full bottles, intending to injure, then you're an asshole. This is a show. It's a work. We all know the deal. It's fun is fun. That's fine. But don't be a shithead. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I get you completely there. And I don't mind if it happens once, because this is the equivalent of Vince McMahon winning the WCW title,
yeah,
in the middle of North Carolina or whatnot. So
and MRB
the one time
and I,
response.
MRB and I talked on when he was on the show about, you know, those Twitter moments. You know, everything is very instant and short, and like social media, let's get it up there. What a visual that was. like that looked incredible on all the tweets from all the different angles of that, of the, you know, the shower of debris and stuff. Yep. It's a hell of a visual.
And it's going to get views, and it's going to make the promotion more popular, even more than it is already.
And Matt Cardona's the hottest shit going now. There's a picture of him standing in front of the Walt Disney statue with Chelsea Green and the GCW title. I mean, that's gold. That's good stuff.
It's all about getting yourself over, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, speaking of getting yourself up and getting yourself over, let's move on to our next question here.
All right.
What song currently or ever is guaranteed to get a strong emotional response out of you?
There's a lot of songs that are out right now that get a strong kind of emotional response for me, but there's also old favorites. I am a big fan of Sloan. Sloan is my favorite band. I don't know why Sloan's not one of the biggest bands in the world, which is the talent and the way they construct the music and their longevity and their kind of evolution. But there's, you know, there's songs that take you back to places and times. And on Sloan's first full-length album, there's a song called Take It In, and it's kind of like starts off ballady but kind of has a bit of a rocky chorus to it. And every time I hear that song to this day, if it comes on in the car or what have you, and I get taken back to you know, 1994 and high school and the friends I had and the things I did and the girls I liked and things like that. And it always takes me back to that place. And there's quite a few songs like that that are older, and there's a lot of songs that are new right now that kind of give me those kind of feelings. But it's a song called Take It In. I should have played it, actually. I never even thought about that. What a dummy. What a missed opportunity. It's called Take It In. It's by Sloan. It's off their first album called Smeared. And yeah, that one's one of the ones that definitely takes me back to times and places and very, very vivid memories.
So folks, this is guaranteed. He hasn't read these questions yet, or else he would have had that ready for us tonight.
Truth be told, I have read the questions because I had to send them to you in the email, but I never even thought about, I like to play newer music. And that's why I don't really go back to older things, but that's a missed opportunity. And if I could do it again, I would change it.
And this is coming from a guy who doesn't want to do much post-production, folks. All right, let's move back to wrestling here for our next question. If you could make the ultimate PWA card of the guys who wrestled there all the years it was going to be, what would it be?
This is a question that I really, really liked, and I thought a lot about it. And I'm not going to, like, I can't give you 8 matches or what have you, but there's a lot of yesteryear talent combined with current talent that I'd love to see. Obviously, the main event, and it's a match that I wish that we could see, and sadly, I don't think we ever will, is TJ Wilson in his prime against Michael Richard Blaze in his prime. And I was thinking about MRB, and I know that we speak in very high regard of him, and it's not ass kissing. It's just, you know, he's a talented guy. And I was thinking about MRB in his prime now, but he might not even be in his prime yet. Do you know what I mean?
I think there's a lot more to come yet.
There's a very, very high ceiling. I'd like to see, you know, Tyson Kidd, TJ Wilson against, I'd like to see Tyson Kidd against somebody like Sean Moore. I would have liked to have seen guys like Phoenix Taylor against guys like Sean Moore. I don't know if MRB and TJ Wilson had any matches back in the Chucky Blaze era, but I mean, he's a different man and a different athlete, you know, back then. I would like to see, and this is something that I wish we could have happened, and it maybe still can, but I very highly doubt it. I'd love to see Andy Anderson and Duke Durango.
Oh God, yes.
There would be so many layers of subtleties and things in that match that both of those guys do. That'd be a lot of fun to watch.
And without sounding like a mark here too much, there'd probably be one bump the whole match.
And that's just it. We'd have to make one of them the baby, and I'm assuming it's going to be Duke. I'm trying to think if in all the time that Andy's been in the PWA, if he's worked baby at all, and I don't believe he has.
I think you could get away with a Regal Finley heel. Who could out heel the heel guy in this match? But
sometimes those matches are a little bit lost on fans. Sometimes, though, they don't really know what to do. Same thing with like babyface matches. Sometimes those are kind of a hard sell to fans. But if anybody could pull it off, it'd be those two guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, a lot of, like, I'd like to see Sean Moore or Alexander Prime against Harry Smith. You know, guys like Dave Swift and Greg Pollock against the guys we have now. I mean, if we could just get in a time machine and combine it all together, what a show we could put out. Holy.
Well, You mind if I throw two in there for you?
Absolutely.
Just because I like to keep the genders balanced on this podcast.
Fair enough.
How about Taya Valkyrie, Frankie Monet versus Taryn from Accounting?
Absolutely. Throw Belle Lovitz in there.
And the other one I would say is Cassie Lee, Zoe Sager.
Absolutely. Definitely. Definitely. Good call.
Well, I love how you're using my absolutely line. Thank goodness. okay. So let's I'm going to flip it back to music again here.
Cool.
If you could see any three punk rock bands on one show from any era, who would they be?
If I could make a magical mystery show and I could bring people back to life and change things around, the Ramones would be the headliners. I never got to see the Ramones. The closest I came to was CJ Ramone, who was the bass player after Dee Dee left, and he was the bass player till the band closed down. He came here and played a show at New City, and he played a bunch of Ramones songs, and it's like the closest that I'll ever get to seeing the Ramones, and it was really, really cool. Ramones, Bad Religion, all-time West Coast greatest punk rock band of all time. And there's a band I really, really like from Sweden called the Satanic Surfers, and they're very kind of...
Wow.
It's just a clever name. They're not like a satanic band or anything, but they're from Sweden, and I've been a big fan of them for almost 20 years. Very kind of skate punky, if you're kind of into that thing. Very, very fast, but like a lot of melody, and a very, very tight band. Really, really cool. And those are the three that kind of leapt out of me that I put on a bill and pay a lot of money to go see that.
All right. So let's move on here. Like I said, I'm flipping it back and forth, but I got a different category for you here.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but we are all very proud of you for all the work that you've been doing in the gym to get yourself better yourself.
Oh, thank you.
What is your proudest moment in the gym so far?
The gym was a thing that happened a number of years ago when I hit 40 years old and I got on the scale and I was 305 pounds and I was like, hey. Not good. My dad was very, very heavy. And so I have kind of bad genetics. And it was a rough starting. It's hard to get motivated, but once you kind of make it a part of your routine, it just becomes a thing that you do. I'm kind of hitting a bit of a plateau right now, and I think I need to change my program up. I got to talk to MRB because I'm getting really tired really easy lately and stuff. And I don't know if it's just the way that, you know, getting back into it after COVID, because the gym was closed for like 17 weeks or something. But the squats for tots thing I did was a lot of fun getting ready for that. And the fact that I was able to hit the 320-pound squat for two reps was nice. Really cool. Dropping a bunch of weight. I've had to punch holes in my belt now because I need to buy a new belt, because like I have belts from like the Big and Tall store. And I think I need to buy like a regular guy belt again, because I've had to punch holes. And I don't know what my weight is now, but I was down at the most, I might've put some back on during like the COVID time, but I was down over 50 pounds at one point, which is
wow.
Very, very proud. The problem is I love to eat, and you can't out exercise a bad diet. And if I could get my eating under control combined with the gym, I'd probably be doing a lot better, but like beer is delicious, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's why you got to keep the six packs away to get a six pack.
Like, have you had a Donair? It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. That's usually my go-to. Wait.
That's breakfast.
All right. Here's a question for you. Off the cuff, you're not on your list here.
Oh, all right.
Favorite Donair place?
My favorite Donair place.
This one I sent out to you, Kyle Jack, specifically, by the way.
My favorite Donair place, and I haven't been there in a while because I used to live on that side of town. But there's a place on Stony Plain Road. It used to be called Mr. Donair, and then it changed to Mama's Donair.
Yep.
That's my all-time favorite. I used to go there all the time when I lived out in the West End. Now there's a place called Tasty, T-A-Y-S-T-E-E. That's over on the north side where I live now, right in the parking lot where the Shenanigans the pub is. That's my go-to now. It's quite good.
Nice.
I love good mom and pop places because I like to support them, and mom and pop places, all like, I don't know why anybody would order pizza 73, and you can go to a mom and pop place for the same price and get way better food.
Absolutely. So proud of you for supporting small business. So what is your proudest moment in wrestling so far?
There's two of them. The thing we did at the Saddle Dome was especially fun for me because, you know, being from Calgary and being a massive Calgary Flames fan, getting a chance to, and like, I thought, you know, I was going to go there and just kind of shoot, like film the show and whatever. But before we left, like I was told there was a battle royal and Kurt's like, do you want to be in the battle royal? And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. So, you know, getting to say that I quote unquote, air quotes, wrestled at the Saddle Dome, is a big deal.
Hey, you probably pulled off more moves there than a bunch of the wrestlers have done in a lot of promotions. So
the match with Andy, also, you know, I know we beat it to death. We talk about it all the time, but it was so fun, very, very special. And that clandestine show, just because it was the first and only time that I've called anything that's been like broadcast live.
Nice.
Very rarely in, like, you know, the commentary, like I do record the commentary live for PWA now, but you know, the shows are edited and put out later, and very, very, very rarely do I edit things out. Most of the time, everything goes in all as it is. There was one time for some reason I called a wrestler by their, like, their real name. It was Chris Steele, and I don't know what just came out, and I was like, okay, I'll take that out. But other than that, I very, very, very rarely edit anything out. But going live was daunting but really fun.
So what was your feelings like? I know when I was doing Clandestine One, it was just another, it was a very special show, but for me, I've done live shows before, so I was having different feelings than you were during that. Describe your feelings of the Clandestine One show and what you thought of the show entirely.
I knew it was going to be different, and I knew it was going to be unique, and I knew it was kind of going to be cool and gritty, and like with all the weird kind of fun gimmicks and like the dildo and stuff. It was going to be something very different from anything I've ever called before, because, you know, PWA don't have a lot of dildos laying around, and not, you know, no death matches and stuff. So, but, you know, just watching the amount of wrestling I do, I pretty much seen everything like that. So from watching other things, I kind of knew what to expect, but, I wasn't really nervous. Plus, MRB gave me the go ahead to have some beers during the show. So by time I didn't get sloppy because I'm professional, but by time the main event rolled around, I was feeling good. But yeah, it was pretty much what I wanted it to be, which was just unique and gritty and special. And I don't know if we're ever going to get a chance to do anything like that again live.
It just got too big.
It's going to depend. Well, I think it's going to depend, and I don't want to speak for MRB, but just for like venues and things like that. But yeah, the whole idea, like the invite only thing, just gave it that cool factor. And yeah, I'll never forget that night. It was so special.
Absolutely. So what would you say is your favorite match or moment you've done commentary on?
Oh boy, there's been a lot. A few that spring to mind was the Iron Man match that BVD had, MRB and Brandon Van Danielson had. Anytime we bring in a special guest, for me, is a lot of fun. You know, getting to call an AJ Styles match is always fun. The only time that I've really slipped out of like commentator, quote unquote, character into just real life was when Teddy Hart almost murdered MRB. And if you go back and like me yelling, I don't care, the match is over. That was, again, when I talked about this with Michael Richard Blaze, like that wasn't me like doing a gimmick. I literally was like, I don't care, I just want to know that my friend is okay. But that one sticks out. You know, the recent Nate shows, you know, the big anniversary shows and stuff always stick out. But those are the ones that really stick out, but everything's fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to get these next two out of the way because they're, how do I put this politely? They're self-serving questions by the people that sent them, I think.
Yeah, there's a few in there who but it's fair. You know, I would do the same thing.
Favorite PWA ref?
I mean, obviously it's Michael Fitzpatrick, but again, it's not blowing smoke, and it's not massaging egos. He really is the best. He really is good at what he does. And again, me being in there for that one match I had really hammered home how important that role is.
Absolutely. And the other one by a TA Straight Arrow, top favorite wrestling managers. I'll accept top three if you're feeling lazy.
Oh, Thaddeus Archer. I mean, Bobby Heenan's always going to be number one. I mean, he was a great manager. He was a great commentator. He was easy to hate. Just a golden tongue. Paul Heyman, I've also been a big fan of. Speaking of golden tongues, I still think to this day that he's one of the best promos in the business right now and in history. I mean, going back, a lot of them just kind of blend together. There's like Jimmy Hart was never really anything all that special to me. No disrespect intended. Just, you know, Slick had a great song, Jive Soul Bro. I was singing that at work the other day. Managing is kind of I'm glad we have guys like Thaddeus around that still, and, you know, some of the guys that are still doing it, because it's really kind of become a lost art in terms of getting guys heat. But I think the talent's so much more well-rounded now. There's promo classes and things like that. And a lot of these guys that had managers back in the day needed them because they needed someone to talk for them. And the way guys are being trained right now, if they're being trained properly, they're being told that that's a huge part of what you need to be, to the point where there's not a lot of guys who need someone to talk for them. So it's becoming kind of a lost art, I think. But yeah, Heenan's always number one.
Yeah. And I want to give a special shout out. If you talk about Alberta managers, I want to give a special shout out to Drew Dalby.
He was great. He really was. Absolutely.
There's only one guy that I know that you would, like, 3 or 4 years after he left, he would still get a building of 1,000 people yelling Drew sucks in unison at him just by the mere sight of him.
Yeah, he is another guy with a golden tongue, and he's another guy who was smart, kind of like Sheik Akbar Shabazz was smart, and I don't want to pull the curtain back too far, but I mean, fuck it, it's what we do here. He's a guy smart enough to make Drew suck shirts and sell them and make money. I mean, that's smart. Like, Sheik did the same thing with the Sheik's a Jackass shirt.
Yep.
And I hope it's okay that I say that, but that's, it's been years now. But, you know, he made like derogatory shit for himself and sold it and made money. It's brilliant.
I bought that Jackass shirt for Sheik.
Hell yeah.
I know all about that. All right, so
it's just smart business. Like, I woke up too fast from a drink in a rented room that doesn't belong to me, and I think my arm's asleep. I don't know, feels like something's missing. I drank all weekend, and I took all of the drugs that we bought from your friend in the valley. I don't remember the sun coming up. The vodka, you talk for some vodka in. Our phones lit up at the same time. You said the
die. Someone's gonna come throw you away.
This one, since we're digging deep here right now, this one might be a little bit more, this is a little bit more on the critical side. What would be your biggest criticism of today's independent wrestlers?
I saw that one and I kind of racked my brain because I watch a lot of independent wrestling. I love independent wrestling. I love the fact that technology is getting a lot easier to use. So there's a lot of companies that are able to put on live shows or tape shows and able to expose, you know, a lot of their talent. Because every, you know, not every, but a lot of independent companies have their MRBs and their Sean Moores. They're guys that are really, really, really good. I don't like, we're seeing chair shots to the head starting to make a bit of a comeback right now. And I don't like that. I know, you know, these guys are grown adults and they can make their decisions as to what they want to do in the ring and all that. But with what we know about CTE and those kind of things, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I respect Matthew Justice as a talent. And again, he's a grown man and he's over as fuck. And he, you know, the fans get riled up, but I just don't like that direct to head stuff. Get gear. And I know gear's expensive because I talked to MRB because MRB gets really, really nice gear. And he tells me the coin he drops on gear. I know it's expensive. I get it. But, you know, get gear. Get good looking gear and stop hitting yourselves in the head.
It's an investment in yourself.
Absolutely. Yep. Definitely.
This is one when I saw this here, I knew I had to get involved in this one too.
Yeah. I would more than love. You're more than welcome to throw your 2 cents in, man. Absolutely.
Well, my biggest critique right now, I'd have to say about the independent wrestlers and basically the wrestling business and all is complacency. I think it'd be the best way to answer it. Promotions like to be at a certain level when they should be at a higher level. They don't look to push themselves to make themselves bigger. When it comes to wrestlers, they're not out there trying to get enough promos out. Like you watch MRB and pretty much every day he's retweeting something. It may not be the same promo or it may not be a different promo every time. It could be just a picture of him going out sometime. Mm-hmm. If you want to make yourself that next level star, you need to push yourself and get yourself out there so people know exactly who you are, what you're doing, and they're always that way they're always talking about you. And if you're not there, they're asking where you are.
Yeah, MRB and I talk a lot about hustle. And you'll see it a lot. I mean, it's kind of hard here because there's only a certain amount of places you can work here. But if you look in the States,
that's a whole ball of wax I can get into.
And you'll see, you know, there's a handful of guys that, like, if you look at the listing of matches and shows on that IWTV that I love, and they're not a sponsor. I wish they were because I think it's such a great. I'm just a shill for them because I just love it because there's so much content for $10. But you'll see the same names on all these different shows and all these different companies, and they're hustling out there, and it shows, and you get better with ring time. It's like just taking the reps. So,
absolutely. Well, let's move on with that. And now you're just going to piss off half your Alberta crowd on this one.
Oh boy.
Well, the next two questions I have here.
Okay.
Okay, and these are very distinct here. First of all, which city has the better wrestling shows, Calgary or Edmonton, typically?
Better wrestling shows. Well, I mean, again, I live in my PWA bubble, and I think that PWA shows in Calgary and here are equally good. Like, is that the question? Like, who gets better shows?
That the question here is, that's what city written. Has the better wrestling shows?
I think PWA puts on just as good shows in Calgary as they do here. A lot of times it's up to, you know, what bodies and talent are available to make trips either way. But I think our shows are just as good in both cities.
Personally, I think the same thing. The only exception I would give is because the crowds have turned out in the Edmonton shows, which is actually, this is actually going to lead into the next question. The fact that you're able to book a college facility like Nate and get it filled in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Just simply the energy in that building in many ways can elevate any match, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. So, mm-hmm. But the second question, and I know this is where we're going to get a little grumbly here. Which city has the better fans?
Oh, I'll be blatantly honest. The fans in Edmonton are substantially better and they turn out in droves. Calgary is definitely not the wrestling town that it's been labeled as, you know, since back in the heyday of Stampede and the Hart family. I don't know if it's just kind of burned out with wrestling or what the deal is, or if there's been a lot of kind of, and I'm not singling out or trying to, you know, talk shit, but there's been a lot of kind of fly-by-night companies that have run through Calgary and come and gone. And I don't know if that's kind of burned the territory a little bit, but we always draw bigger houses here in Edmonton. The fans are louder and a lot more excited. There's a lot of smart fans. I don't want to say smart with a K, just because that's kind of a negative connotation.
Devoted
yeah,
fans.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of devoted fans. There is both, but I find there's a lot of devoted fans in Calgary. But just number-wise, we always do better houses in Edmonton.
Well,
we got great fans here in Edmonton, and I love them all.
Yeah, well, there are great fans in both cities. And like I said earlier, the fact that we could book out Nate and have 1,000 people there for a show in Edmonton, and as soon as you announce who's in there, that should say enough to that.
So. Oh yeah, for sure.
Let's see now. That one you already covered. Now, besides chair shots, what should performers be doing more or less of? Two-part question there.
You really got to market yourself again. Designing merchandise and things like that. Again, you got to get good gear. You got to make that connection. That's what, you know, the social media age is here, and making that connection and answering tweets and answering Facebook messages and things like that. You got to make yourself available to the fans. Got to understand they're the ones who buy. You know, if I didn't work for PWA, I don't know if I would be able to afford to go to a lot of shows, because I'm not a wealthy man. I'm very much a paycheck to paycheck guy. So, you know, these guys are giving their entertainment dollar to you, and there's a lot of choices. So, you know, make yourself available, make that connection. You know, merchandise is always really cool. I watched a show on IWTV. They're doing this kind of documentary series, The Life of So-and-So. And there was one on Edith Surreal, who is a fascinating character study in wrestling, transgender female. And she was talking, she would go through how she would design her shirts and making runs to the post office to mail things out to people who would buy them and stuff like that. It's all up to, it's all down to hustle, really.
Yeah. It's all about the work ethic. Mm-hmm. I missed this one self-serving one once again. Who's your favorite wrestler that was born in Kosovo and that you personally know and have called at least one match of theirs?
Well, I'm afraid of him now. He used to be a nice guy. He used to be the spaceman, and now he's all angry and whatever. But Berat Gorani, I just like saying Berat Gorani. He's a good guy. I don't want to blow the gimmick or blow the cover, but he's a good guy, and he loves the business, and he's fun to watch in the ring. And he really made a connection, you know, as a baby face, and now in taking it in this direction, I'm hoping that connection stays in kind of a different way. And I hope to, I'm looking forward to seeing what he will do whenever the fuck we start running shows again.
Amen on that.
Pardon the language.
Oh, hey, I told you BBM is a word-free zone here. Oh, yeah. So
I dropped the F-bomb here.
All right. So which in his prime personas would Mick Foley work best for Mick Foley in today's wrestling, if you take away the nostalgia factor?
Honestly, I think any of them really could. I like the backstory of Dude Love, when you take, you know, what he wanted to be compared to what he ended up being. That's a fascinating kind of character development. Yeah. The Cactus Jack, just like tough guy badass, I think would work really well in like the current kind of grungy deathmatch indie scene. Mankind, I was never a big fan of. I always thought it was kind of...
Mankind was,
I mean, silly's not the choice of word I would use, but you know what I mean? It was a little gimmicky.
I think Mankind in many ways was sort of a Mikey Whipwreck kind of guy that you would just, everybody would beat the crap out of him and he would just take it.
Like him pulling out his own hair and stuff. That's a cool visual. And he did a great job with it, but I think it would be like my least favorite face of Foley, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I completely agree there. Favorite interaction with a pro?
We've had a lot of really cool people come through the PWA. I bought Bushwhacker Luke chicken nuggets. I told that story. One of the funny ones is at the Edmonton venue. I'm up on the stage behind the screen, and I have a camera with a monitor so I can call the shows, and you know, the guys can see what's going on in the ring. And I have, you know, my computer plugged into the sound system, and Cody Rhodes walked by and accidentally kicked out the plug-in from the sound system.
Oh,
and he apologized. He's like, "Oh, sorry, man." And I'm like, no, it was in the middle of a match. Nothing was playing. It was fine. So I just walked back in and I was like, "Oh, it's okay. Plug it in." And everyone's like, "Oh, Boris, if I did that, you'd give me shit." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm not going to give Cody Rhodes shit." Abyss was real. Like a lot of guys, like I've been really like Abyss was really cool. Homicide sat and talked to me for a good long while. I gave Iron Sheik a beer and he said, "God bless me," which was cool. Everyone for the most part's been really, really cool. Abyss was very, very cool. I hear Gangrel bought a bunch of guys dinner. I wasn't there for that show. But yeah, those are some of my favorites.
I can vouch for that on another show. So I definitely happened. I seen him come in another time with another promotion. So
I've heard he's very, very cool.
Absolutely is. Speaking of food, what size of popcorn do you get at the movies? Do you layer your popcorn or do you use boosters?
Okay. I get like a big, I love movie popcorn. You can't recreate that anywhere. Like none of this microwave popcorn stuff, none of it. You can't recreate good, like Cineplex Odeon popcorn. Yeah. You layer the butter. Hell yeah. The flavor boosters. No, I tried, salt and vinegar flavor booster once and it got up my nose and like exploded my brain. Like if that's what cocaine is like, no thank you.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, I tried the flavor booster once and it wasn't really for me, but yeah, I hear you can get popcorn delivered by Skip the Dishes, which is a horrible idea.
Yeah, it's actually a real thing and it just scares me for the fact that
that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, very much so.
What's your favorite? You layer that butter. Absolutely.
What's your favorite pizza?
I do like Chicago deep dish. I'm not gonna lie, it's greasy as shit, but fuck, is it good?
I'll give you that one.
Especially after you had a few beers, you know, some nice greasy Chicago deep dish.
Just something to soak up that beer, right?
If I had to get like a chain, I don't mind Pizza Hut stuffed crust. But if I'm ordering pizza, I'll get like a mom and pop place. But don't put tomato sauce on Donair pizza, all right? Stop doing that. Donair sauce goes on Donair pizza. Do not put tomato sauce on Donair pizza. If there's anything you take away from this week's episode, do not put tomato sauce on Donair pizza.
I'm going to throw another curveball here on behalf of PWA COO Kurt Sorokin.
Kurt Sorokin?
He didn't message me this, but I know he'd love to ask this right now.
Okay.
Pineapple on pizza.
Yes, we are pro pineapple on pizza.
Thank you. And he's probably throwing a speaker right now.
Is he why? Is he anti-pineapple?
I'm pretty sure he's anti-pineapple, but
really?
I've seen some battles online with that. So
I'm anti-onion. I'm anti-onion on anything, really. But we are pro-pineapple on pizza.
All right. Who are some wrestlers that have come to PWA that you thought, oh, they'll never make it, but end up making it?
The one that springs to mind, and I'm having the hardest time remembering his name, and I feel terrible. And it's not a cut against him because he's super entertaining and super talented. He worked for NXT UK, and I know his real name.
Amir Jordan.
That's his name. I know his shoot name, but I don't want to say it. And I was drawing a blank. But yeah, like Amir, and again, Amir, great guy. Great, great guy. Well, him and I used to have a lot of laughs and stuff, and he did a great job in his role in PWA. He was great as Sheik Akbar Shabazz's lackey. But if you had told me that he was going to sign a deal, I would have said you're crazy.
Yeah, because I think he had one match and that wasn't in PWA when he was on his tour in Alberta.
He was, when I saw that question, he was the first guy that sprung to mind. And it's not that he didn't deserve it or didn't hustle or anything like that. He just doesn't seem like that. Like the kind of guy that they're gonna give a contract to. And I was super happy for him when he got signed.
Absolutely. Favorite pro wrestling interaction? You've already brought that one up.
Yeah, I pretty much covered that one, I think.
Yeah, any of these questions that have been sent in that say least favorite, I like to keep things positive.
Yeah, here, I don't want to.
We'll skip those here. Favorite James Brown song.
My favorite James Brown song is Cold Sweat.
Nice.
You punch that into your YouTube machine later and let your feet do the walking. Cold Sweat, that's my jam.
Favorite Iron Sheik promo.
Favorite Iron Sheik promo? Anytime he calls somebody an intelligent Jew businessman is a good one. The one where he had the chicken in the cage is good. Yep. Anytime he calls Gene Okerlund Gene Mean. And there was one time he called Hillbilly Jim Helly Belly Jim. These are all on YouTube. There's playlists of Iron Sheik promos. And when I'm down to the dump sometime, I'll just hit like a YouTube playlist and watch Iron Sheik promos for a half hour. And then I'm happy again. But yeah, Helly Belly Jim is a good one.
All right. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time? And why is it Coco Beware?
Okay.
I don't know where that comes from, sir.
I know exactly where that came from. I have a very, very dear, dear old friend of mine named Chris who lives in Calgary, who's not a wrestling guy, but very much a music guy. And he checks out the podcast. No disrespect to the Coco Beware and the Birdman with the brain buster as a finish. And I take a lot of shit for my favorite wrestler of all time, but I don't care. I stand by it. My favorite wrestler of all time is Sabu. I watched wrestling. I grew up on it when I was a kid, and kind of in the early to mid 90s, I got out of wrestling when I grew up, but wrestling didn't. And then I kind of got back into it just at the beginning of the Attitude Era. Again, there's a lapse of a few years where I didn't watch. And when I got back into it, I started exploring things. The internet was kind of becoming a thing and you could read about it. And I started reading about ECW and this guy Sabu, and I got a chance to see some videos and just the things that he was doing. I'd never seen anybody do crazy, crazy shit like that before. And I fell in love with the guy and just always stuck with me, always enjoyed his stuff. I know, you know, he's not necessarily a great human being, but who in the wrestling business is. And I know there's a lot of people who have a lot of opinions about Sabu. And I know, you know, if you see the matches he's doing now, it's not the same, but of course, you know, who is after all the years and all the miles and all that stuff. But
exactly.
In his heyday, give me like a Sabu match and I'm all about it.
Still like a statue, sitting with my back to the wall. Trust them at all. I can see them coming and I can see them go. I can see inside of them, I can see they glow. Still like a statue sitting with my back to the wall.
if you were making another edition of Why I Love Wrestling on VHS or Beta, what matches would you include? P.S. I have volumes 1 and 2, and I still got them transferred to digital.
I know who that came from. That came from Sergeant Hazard.
Nice.
We had a Beta when I was a kid, by the way, just on the side note. I was a tape trader when I first got back into wrestling again. And that was the way that I was able to see a lot of this stuff. Is I got online, and there was a couple of different tape trading forums, and I traded tapes. And I made an 8-hour compilation called Why I Watch Wrestling. And there was all, like, I just put all like my favorite matches on it. And I don't have it anymore. I wonder if actually Don could send me a copy of that, because I made a second one too. And I don't remember really what was on them now. This was over 20 years ago. What would go on it now? There's so much content out there that I like right now. I wouldn't be able to narrow it down. There'd be a bunch of GCW. There'd be a bunch of New Japan stuff. There'd be some Dragon Gate stuff. There'd be a lot of indie stuff. Yeah.
There'd be a subscription to IWTV included.
Yeah. Again, it's a great service. They should sponsor me, because I sing their praises almost every week. I should send them a message.
Maybe I'll have to talk to Pivot Share and see if they're actually worth working, or maybe you have to move BBM over there. Maybe get a free subscription out there for
them. It's a great service. It's well worth my $10 a month. It's well worth my 999 yen.
Exactly. If you're a wrestling personality during the 80s WWF era, what would your theme be? Please include signature move and entrance music.
What would my theme be if I was an 80s? It would be Master and Servant by Depeche Mode, and I'd come out in like a bondage outfit. That's not bad. I just came up with that off the top of my head, and that's pretty good.
Wow.
Like the mask with the zipper mouth and everything. And and finishing move. I don't know. I don't know if I can say anything like that on the internet without getting canceled.
Yeah, let's just leave it to the imagination.
But yeah, that's not bad.
Let's get these freelance artists that are listening to this to draw some of this stuff up. Yeah. I don't want to.
I think I'd look good in a leather mask with a zipper in the mouth.
Speaking of strange tights, or tights in general.
Okay.
Who has the best tights in wrestling history?
I'll tell you who has the best tights in wrestling history. And they have gone, they've disappeared. And you know how like A&E's doing that lost treasures of the WWE thing? I wish we could do this, but I saw a picture of my good friend and nemesis, Andy Anderson, wearing black tights with multicolored neon hearts on them. I saw a picture of this. This was made years ago. And I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen, just because I know Andy and I like to bust his balls. And he doesn't know whatever became of those tights. But if you know what became of Andy Anderson / JT Atlas / whatever the fuck else he was called, Blanco Lobo Wolfenstein, whatever. If you know what happened to those tights, I will take up a collection and pay top dollar to have those in my possession.
Who has the best face mask up, it says here, but I'm assuming makeup.
Oh, makeup. I was always partial to what the Road Warriors did. Sting did some cool stuff, but I liked what the Road Warriors did. Hawks was basically the same, but Animal kind of changed his up a little bit between like the spider design. Jeff Hardy does some cool stuff, but I was always partial to the Road Warriors. That was one of the things that kind of drew me to them, was they looked badass with the paint.
Nice. Let's see here. Who wears the bicep tassels in the most aesthetically pleasing manner?
The bicep tassels in the most aesthetically. Ultimate Warrior kind of springs to mind with like there's boot tassels that I would give Tyson Kidd the boot tassel award, but the bicep tassels, they used to, like, I forget who it was. I think it was. Heenan or somebody used to bug Warrior and say that they were no pest strips, like those things that the bugs would fly on and stick onto. But, I got to give Ultimate Warrior the bicep tassel award.
All right. Well, music wise, favorite ska band?
Oh, Scotty. I don't really have a favorite ska band. I like there's bands that have like ska-ish like elements to them. like No Doubt, like earlier No Doubt had a lot of ska to it. The Interrupters have a little bit of like ska kind of sound to them. A band like Goldfinger, but I don't really have a favorite ska band per se. I couldn't even name a full ska band, to be perfectly honest. I don't dislike it. But yeah, that's the best I can do on that.
Can I just go with whoever plays Sami Zayn's entrance music?
Sure.
We'll go with that.
Okay.
That makes life a lot easier. That way we actually give an answer.
Fair.
All right. I'm going to try and flow these together here. When did you discover wrestling? And what was your first memory of it?
See, I don't remember my first memory. And I find it really odd that there's people who can. Maybe I just have a terrible, terrible memory. I know that my dad would watch it. And I remember watching it with him. I don't remember the first memory. I remember some of the first big angles or stories from when I was a kid, like when Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan. I remember Macho Man with the ring bell into Ricky Steamboat's neck. And I remember seeing vignettes of him at the speech therapist trying to get his speech back. And thinking what a asshole, you know, Macho Man was. And then years later, when I was an adult, I saw those same vignettes and I'm like, these are fucking horrible. How did I buy this shit when I was a kid? But when I was a kid, you know, it was awesome. I remember the Zodiac from Stampede Wrestling being terrified because of the way they altered his voice in those vignettes.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing them again when I was a grown up and going, wow, this is fucking terrible as well. I don't remember the first thing, but those are some of the, like the bigger angles that were going on, and then when like Andre turned on Hogan before WrestleMania 3 and that kind of thing.
All right, what is it that you love most about the pro wrestling business?
About the pro wrestling business?
Yep.
I like to be creative, and it gives me a chance to, you know, to do creative things, all kinds of things. I think professional wrestling is the ultimate form of entertainment. It's got a little bit of something for everybody. I firmly believe that I can turn anyone into a wrestling fan. I just have to find the kind of wrestling they will like. It's just like music. There's like, even within a certain genre of music, there's a lot of sub, like even within punk, there's ska and skate punk and all this kind of stuff. So I believe I can make anybody a wrestling fan. I just have to find what they like. But I think it's the ultimate form of storytelling. It's got good guys and it's got bad guys and it's got violence and it's got sex and it's got drama. It's got comedy. It's got everything that can make a story well. And I don't even need, from me personally, necessarily a story. If the guys are good enough in the ring that they're strictly what they do in that match can be entertaining enough for me.
Fair enough. Now, getting to you in the ring.
Oh, Lord.
Favorite part of the infamous Big Bad Boris Andy Anderson match?
There's two things that that stick out to that. And one of them was because, like, in the heat, we didn't plan anything in the heat. He was just like, I'm just going to beat you up for a while. And he's like, don't worry, you're not going to have to run the rope sort of thing. I'm just going to, you know, do some kind of old school beat you up. And I sold to the ropes. And I'm on my knees and my arms over the ropes, like looking to the outside. And I feel a foot on my back. And then I feel a second foot on my back. And I'm like, is he standing on me? And I kind of looked back and I was like, yeah, he's standing on me. So I didn't know that he was going to stand on me, but he stood on me. And then if you go back and you watch, once I realized that he changed the finish, scissors, scissors, scissors. As soon as that third hand came down, I let go of him and I roll on my back and I just took 5 or 6 seconds to just stare up at the lights and just be like, okay, it's over. I got through it. I think it was good and I'm not hurt. Like everything's fine. I just took just a second to kind of enjoy it before, you know, we did the angle where they carried him out and everything, but I just took that 1 second to just be like, okay, this is done. And I'm happy and it went well, but yeah, he stood on me. Stood.
What a jerk.
Yeah, fucking guy.
Which two punk bands would you have face off against each other in a cage match for the tag team titles?
Well, because of the little bit of a feud that they had recently after the John Barbados punk special, you get the Ramones and you get the Sex Pistols, you put them in War Games.
Damn.
I don't know who would win, though. If it was like a legit scrap, I don't know. Because Joey couldn't fight anybody, but Didi could fight. Johnny could fight. I bet Marky could probably fight, but the Sex Pistols, I bet they could all fight.
So, I got to feel this might be a Twitter poll for you to put up.
That's not a bad idea. I'm going to do that. Once this goes up, I'm definitely going to do that. So check on the Twitter right now and vote, because I'll be interested to see what the outcome is. My Twitter is at BB Boris. That's BBBORIS.
And I'll make sure to retweet it on the Backbreaker Media page. Backbreaker Media without the A, because we're Canadian already.
That's a great idea.
Which wrestlers would make up your ultimate punk supergroup? Who would be your NWO of punk bands?
Which wrestlers would be a good punk band? Well, CM Punk, obviously. Sami Zayn, Eric Cannon, Alex Shelley. He's got the Teenage Bottle Rocket logo on his butt. Hulk Hogan was going to play bass in Metallica, right? So,
well, of course, yeah.
Do you buy that shit? Because I sure don't.
No.
And I think the guys from Metallica actually went on record saying that that is not the case.
Oh, no. If you pay Metallica enough, I'm sure they would.
True. Those are the guys that spring to mind. And what's that guy, Bugenhagen or Rick Boogs or whatever?
Rick Boogs.
He plays guitar, right?
He plays pretty good guitar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll throw him in there too. We just need a drummer. Who wrestles and plays the drums besides me? Well, I don't wrestle, though. We need a wrestling drummer. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
You know what? Maybe paint them white and make Nick Gage do it.
There you go.
If he thinks they're light tubes, he'll play with them.
He can be in my band anytime.
All right. So what is your favorite thing about calling wrestling matches?
It's funny because I used to be a heel manager a long, long time ago for a very short time. And I loved it. It was so fun and it was a great time. And I learned a lot about how things work. And I miss it. And I still miss it now, but I missed it for the longest time. And I liked, you know, being in the show and interacting and getting that rush of performing with the fans and all that, you know, shit people say. And I made a realization a couple of years or so ago that if I was still managing, I'd be out there for one match, maybe two. I'd be involved in one match, maybe two. But now I'm involved in every match, which I think is really cool. But I like to help tell the stories. I like to be creative. I like to perform. And, I get to watch wrestling for and you know, talk about wrestling. What's bad about that?
Absolutely.
I like to be part of the show. I like to you know, take matches and hopefully I can make them better, which sometimes is hard, not because the matches are not because the matches are bad, because some, like, a lot of the shit's so good, how can I make this better when it's already so fucking good? You know what I mean?
That's one of the weird things.
That was not meant to be a cut at all.
Oh, trust me, I got cuts for that, but that's a different story altogether. But one of the hardest things I find as a wrestling commentator is knowing that moment where you just sit back. You don't have to say a word and just let the match go to you instead of you having to bring the match to everybody else.
Yeah, that was a thing that when I first started, and I've talked about this before, where it's hard for a guy like me to get advice because I don't really have anybody I can talk to that's a successful commentator that I know around here to get advice from. But I used to, when I first started, I would like say every move, and I learned to let things breathe and let, you know, it's like they tell wrestlers, if you think you're going too slow, slow down, let things breathe, let things soak in. Sometimes I'll talk about what's coming up next, or I'll talk about what's already happened, or I'll talk about how, you know, plug social medias and stuff. You know, there's times you can let it breathe and let the action speak for itself. And I used to talk a lot when I first started. I think I still do talk quite a bit, but when I first started, I talked a lot and I would say every move, and I'm going to talk about a fucking hammerlock. I think I still do sometimes, but like, it's a fucking hammerlock.
Yeah.
So, no disrespect to the hammerlock, of course.
Absolutely not. But here's the question. I'm just going to throw this off the cuff for you. Take myself out of the equation here, because when we work together, it's a complete different dichotomy than what I think everybody else that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your favorite color guy that you've worked with?
I've never really worked with color guys as much as I just had wrestlers
Well, who's your favorite wrestler that you've had?
My first reaction to that is Sheikhak Barshabazz, because he was one of the first guys that decided he wanted to come in and do the things. And he's always entertaining. He was the one who was the first guy that said spine on the pine during a match, and it made me laugh. And I always had a lot of fun working with Sheikhak Barshabazz. Doing matches with Andy Anderson was fun, and it got even better after our match, because we had our own little kind of thing going during the matches. And I think sometimes that overshadowed a bit, or not overshadowed, but we weren't paying enough attention to what was going on in the ring, which I regret, but we were kind of doing our own thing. I think I only did it with him once, but I'd like to do it again. Kurt was actually really, really good. We called a couple of matches a long, long time ago at an Edmonton show, and I quite enjoyed doing some commentary with him as well.
You know, I really enjoy listening to your commentary, because you have this way of just carrying the match along and making everybody feel invested. And that's the biggest thing that a lot of commentators have trouble with these days. They're trying to get their stuff over, and they're worried about getting themselves over rather than getting the match over.
Yeah, my whole reason for being is to try to get over the guys in the ring. And there's been given a lot of compliments from, like when the guys, you know, tell me that they enjoy my stuff, it means a lot to me. And I've heard, you know, guys talk about older matches and say, oh, imagine how much better this would be if Boris called it. And that means the world to me. Actually, when I went to Radway on Sunday to watch the RCW show. My girlfriend and I were not doing anything, and we were like, well, what the hell? Let's go to Radway. And the main event was MRB and Heavy Metal it was a 60-minute draw, and it was fantastic. And right when the bell rang, Steven Styles, who runs RCW, walked past the table where Melissa and I were sitting, and he's like, you should be calling this match, and just kind of as he walked by. And to me, that's an amazing compliment. Like, I appreciate that.
Maybe you'll have to get the video, and we'll have to hook something up for you.
That's out of my realm of expertise. I just, I go where the wind blows.
Oh,
I'm the wind.
I get it. All right. Well, two more questions, and I think I got everybody's that were included in here. So your second last one, who is your favorite punk band, and why is it Hanson?
You know what? I'm going to go on record right now, and this is going to kill any of my street cred or my punk rock cred or whatever, but fucking Umbop is a banger, all right? And it took me a long time to admit it, because, you know, when you first came out and you're looking at this shit and it's all these teeny boppers, go back and listen to Umbop. That's a fucking great song. And I know Chris is mad at me now because he's like, fuck Hanson. I couldn't name another Hanson song if you put a gun to my head, but go back and put Umbop on and take off your glasses and just appreciate it for what it is. That song slaps. As John Oliver would say, that song fucks.
Absolutely.
To answer the question. It's 1 and 1A with the Ramones and Bad Religion. I can't really pick between the two of them because they're very different bands, but equally good and equally important to me.
Fair enough. All right. And your last question, as we wrap this up, we'll end it on a wrestling related question
here. Okay.
Which five wrestlers do you think will take the business forward in the coming years?
Oh boy.
Got to end it on a gooder.
I mean, talking locally, you've got your MRBs and your Sean Moores. Zoe's really coming into her own. Taryn from accounting gets better every time. I have not had a lot of experience watching Heavy Metal because, again, I live in my PWA bubble. But what I've seen from him in Clandestine and that match he had in Radway, Heavy Metal is very, very talented. And he's been, my limited bits of working with him in Clandestine has been an absolute professional and pleasure. In terms of the grand scheme of things, like guys that aren't already in WWE, I talk a lot about GCW just because it's one of my favorites, but Chris Dickinson, you're seeing in Ring of Honor now, and he's tearing it up. I've always been a big fan of Chris Dickinson. He's got that intensity. He's got a great look. You can tell he works a lot on his body. He's got that kind of intense charisma about him, almost like a Jon Moxley sort of thing. I'm a big Tony Deppen guy. There are a lot of female wrestlers on the independent scene right now. There's a guy And I want to preface this because he's not my cup of tea, but a lot of people really like him. And there's an interesting vibe. His name is Calvin Tankman. Have you seen Calvin Tankman?
Oh yeah. He's on the MLW roster.
Yes. Calvin Tankman's very over and very popular. And I think there's something unique about him. I don't know if he's a Vince McMahon guy because of his body type, but Calvin Tankman's very over. I like Lee Moriarty a lot. There's a lot of super, super young guys like Starboy Charlie and Wheeler Yuta that are coming up. Billy Starks, I think she's like 18 and she's tearing it up right now. So I think the future's in good hands.
All right. And let's go with one more. Let's go to the bonus question here.
Oh, the bonus round.
The bonus round. One last question.
Okay.
What would Boris right now say to Boris, who just started out in his wrestling career? What would he say to him?
Okay, this is going to sound super existential and lame, but a lot of times, even to this day, I don't feel like I belong because I'm not an athlete. Do you know what I mean? I don't wrestle. Oh, and I know there's
remember who you're talking to here.
And buddy. I know like some of the greatest minds in the history of this industry are not wrestlers. But I would say to me like 20 some odd years ago that there's a place for you here. Mouth shut, ears open. Be respectful, which I'd like to think I always have been for the most part. I've had moments that I'm not proud of that I don't, you know.
Everybody has those.
That happened a long time ago. But yeah, there's a place for you here. And remember, this is supposed to be fun.
Yeah, that's one thing a lot of people forget these days. It's all about having fun, right?
No, it happened to me. And I took some time away and then I came back and it's been a lot of fun since.
Well, speaking of a lot of fun, this has been a lot of fun here tonight.
There's two more super quick things that I want to talk about super, super quick. Sure. I'm not going to pretend that I know a lot about Super Porky, but I do know that every time I saw Super Porky wrestle, which was a handful of times, I actually remember getting a CMLL. My first Lucha tape I ever traded for was, it was Atlantis and Villano 5 mask versus mask match. Again, a million years ago, but Super Porky was on that show and I was captivated because he's just this short like bowling ball with arms and legs, but super over and super fun. And I can't say I saw a lot of his matches, but every time I saw his matches I was entertained. I thought he was a lot of fun. So rest in peace to Super Porky. And also, I'm not a heavy metal guy. I was a little bit of like a glam metal kid back in like junior high days, but not really a big heavy metal guy. But I do respect drummers. I love drummers. And Joey Jordison, who was the first drummer for Slipknot, amazing, amazing, like double bass drummer and just like super, super talented. And he passed away yesterday. So I just wanted to say rest in peace to Joey Jordison as well. 46 years old. That's only a couple of years older than me. So
yeah, likewise.
RIP to Super Porky and to Joey Jordison.
Absolutely. And people are dying way too young these days.
Yeah, it's that's why I'm trying to work out. I want to stave off elimination, so to speak.
Well, Boris, you're doing an excellent job in getting yourself
holy
in good
fuck
shape.
Do you know what I just realized?
Oh god,
here we never took a song break. I had songs pulled for this podcast and we never got to any of them. Shit. Maybe what I'll do is I'll just cut them in. So if it looks like I don't intro any songs during this podcast, it's because I'm an idiot and just got carried away with myself and we didn't cut in songs.
Well, but, that's my fault. You know, you always blame the guy that's in charge of the podcast.
So the first song that I'm going to play back in time, this is embarrassing. The first song I'm going to play back in time is from a band called Spanish Love Songs. I love, love, love this band. I don't remember where I heard them first, but just the honest songwriting really caught me. It's very kind of almost emo-y, which I don't usually go in for, but listening to this album really kind of touched me a little bit emotionally, and it's really, really good. The song is called Phantom Limb. It's a new single they just released that I assume is going to tide us over into a full-length album. So yeah, the first song you're going to hear like half an hour ago is called Phantom Limb by a band called Spanish Love Songs. And the second song you're going to hear about 20 minutes or so ago, it's from a project called Fuzzed Out. The guitar player for the aforementioned Sloan, named Patrick Pentland, did a little side project-y single band slash whatever you want to call it called Fuzzed Out. And just a couple of songs, a couple of just kind of like poppy, fuzzy rock songs I really enjoyed. The song is called Sitting With My Back to the Wall. The artist is Fuzzed Out, and you're going to hear that about 20 minutes ago as well.
See, folks, I told you Boris is not about the post editing that much.
Well, I mean, fuck, whatever.
it's all good. But yeah, we're going to wrap this up. But I guess I got the pick for the last song.
You do. You did get the pick for the last song. And I want you to tell me what the song is and why you picked it. I can't believe I forgot to cut the songs and I feel like an idiot.
Well, no, that I should have taken a break in the middle. So you know what? Every other week, you're going to blame yourself for screwing Seg up. This week, you can give it to me. It's all good.
Yeah, way to fuck that up.
Yeah, damn it. I'll have to slap myself on the hand here and get the owner of this podcast involved in this. But anyway, we're going to go with Thunderkiss 65 by a White Zombie.
Why?
It actually was the original theme, the opening music to my Blown Call show when I started out in 2011.
Now, do you also know that it was, I don't know if it was the original, but before they had their custom theme recorded by Harry Slash and the Slash Tones, this song was also the introduction to ECW television.
Wow, really?
Uh-huh. So it's all the circle of life.
Definitely the circle of life here, Boris. But once again, I want to thank you for thinking of me and having me help you ask the questions so that you have all the answers.
Hey, this was a lot of fun, man. Well, when we do Ask Boris part two, we'll bring you back again.
Well, now, hopefully we get to hear a little bit more off of that.
Now, next week.
Oh, yes.
The lovely and talented Miss Zoe Sager is slated to be my guest on the Punk and Pod Hours podcast next week, which I think is going to be interesting because I've known Zoe, I want to say, for a couple of years maybe now or so, but it's people you only see at the shows, so I literally know nothing about Zoe, so it'll be interesting to kind of learn about where she came from and her wrestling story, and as well as what song she picks. So those always interest me, so I think it's gonna be a lot of fun with Zoe next week.
Absolutely. And just want to say, like I said, thank you. And when it comes to Zoe, like I've had two interviews with her, so I'm really looking forward to hearing the questions you have to ask her and what you could dig up about what I consider one of the top prodigies in all of Canada in terms definitely. Of women's wrestling.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Mr. Maloney. We are going out to Thunderkiss 65 from White Zombie on the Punk and Pod Rivers podcast, and we will talk to y'all next week.